Chapter 61. Eric lay in a hospital bed in the ED examining room, coming back to his senses, thanks to Narcan, an inhalant that directly blocked the effect of morphine, usually given to patients who were overdosing. He had a plastic clip on his finger to monitor his vitals, and an IV port on his hand for a saline drip. He was still dressed in his clothes, damp from the sprinklers, and his shirt and hands were covered with Christine's blood, which hadn't been completely washed away. Christine was in surgery, and Eric didn't know how she was doing. He sent up a silent prayer for her recovery. He closed his eyes against the harsh fluorescent lighting, trying to chase from his mind the image of Christine bleeding on the office floor, her throat a crimson gash. He could hear the police, hospital administrators, and Lori talking in low tones outside the examining room. Paul was on his way to HGH, having instructed Eric not to speak to the police without him. The chances of that were slim to none, anyway. Eric couldn't tell the police what had happened before he'd had time to process it himself. Eric let it sink in that Sam had tried to kill Christine, as well as the fact that Sam had actually been the one who had killed Renee. On the way down to the ED, Eric had told the police that Sam had admitted that he, and not Max, had murdered Renee, and they had promised him they'd tell the Radnor police and Max's attorney. Eric remembered that first night when he had met Max and his grandmother, and it struck him that he was now in the very same examining room, so matters had come to a full, horrifying circle. He kept his eyes closed, feeling the loss of Max's grandmother as well as Renee and Christine. It broke his heart to lose Sam so horribly. So much violence, so much death. He flashed on Perino, trying to save Sam's life at the last minute, which would take a toll on the man's already fragile emotional state. Eric would have to study his file and follow up on Perino's beliefs that Sam had been giving him pills that made him worse, not better. It was completely possible that Sam had manipulated and used Perino the same way that he'd manipulated and used Max. Eric shuddered inwardly to his very marrow. He would be replaying in his mind for a long time how he had put so much trust in Sam, which had been so profoundly misplaced. Eric knew as a psychiatrist that so many of us wore masks, showing one face to the world when our psyche was much different, so he should have known better. He realized he had a mask of his own, perhaps one that he had been wearing too long. The mask of the perfect chief, who was number two and perennially trying harder. The mask of the perfect father who protected his daughter too much. The mask of the perfect husband who simply hadn't been the man his wife wanted in the end. Maybe it was time to let all the masks drop and to see what was really beneath them. When this was all over, maybe he'd call Arthur and get a refresher course. Eric felt his eyes film, and although he didn't understand exactly why, he didn't try to analyze his emotions. The only thing he knew for sure was the purity of the love he had for Hannah, and his heart felt light that he had cleared his name, not only for his sake, but for hers. His daughter, her friends, and the other kids at school wouldn't think he had murdered anyone. He could go back to being a psychiatrist and a father, however imperfect. He would still think too highly of people he cared for, like Sam and maybe even Caitlin. For him, love would always be blind, at least in the beginning. That couldn't be helped, nor should it be. He was a human being, after all. "Hey," Lori peeked around the patterned curtain. "May I come in?" "Sure." Eric smiled, happy to see her, and Lori smiled back, walking over to the bed. "How are you feeling?"
"Better."
"The police are waiting until you feel well enough to make a statement, but I told them to cool their jets."
"Thanks."
"In the good news department, it looks like Christine is going to make it. 2 transfusions later, we got to her just in time."
"Great."
Eric felt relief and gratitude wash over him. "In a final irony, her blood is AB negative, which is rare, and we ran out. Guess who had to give her a bag?" Lori made a face, screwing up her nose adorably.
"You?"
"Yes. Don't think it was easy." Eric laughed. "It felt good."
"How's my unit?"
"A wreck." getting cleaned up, but everybody's calming down. Amaka's in charge.
Thank God. And Perino, how's he?
Down the hall, doing fine. His wife isn't happy.
I'm sure not.
Eric couldn't think about it now. Where were my other attendings during the fire, David and Jack? David passed out trying to put out the fire. Turns out he has asthma. Jack was in endocrinology chatting up some nurse.
Lori picked up his hand lightly, her fingers around his wrist.
Meanwhile, I'm here in a professional capacity. As your ED, Doc.
Are you taking my pulse?
Not exactly.
Lori smiled. Then you're holding my hand. Lori smiled, wider.
You kissed me that night at the mall in the car.
That was your imagination, the whole thing. It was a fantasy of yours. It didn't really happen.
I didn't run into the mall either.
Who would do something that stupid?
Not me. I'm the chief. You're talkative, you know that?
Lori leaned over and kissed him on the lips. Once. Then again, softly. Wow, Eric said, feeling a stirring in his heart that he hadn't felt in a long time.
Lori straightened up, smiling sweetly. A dark curl fell over her eye, freeing itself from her pencil topknot. You like my bedside manner?
Don't get ahead of yourself.
Ha! Lori's expression changed, growing serious. Well, I suppose I should say you were right, and I'm glad of it. You believed in Max a lot more than I did. But he didn't kill that girl. So, happy ending, right? Kind of?
Kind of.
Eric felt a pain in his chest. It's just awful that Renee was murdered so young and for such a stupid reason. As if any reason could justify murder. Why did Sam do it again?
He wanted to be me. More accurately, he wanted what he perceived I had. He wanted the applause, and really, he wanted the money.
Eric thought back to what Sam had said on the patio. I'm going to talk to the powers that be and tell them to investigate Brexler on the pharmacy review board. If that jerk is getting kickbacks from the drug companies, and that's how he built that damn Myrtle Beach house, I want him in jail. Enough with the gossip. It's criminally actionable, and I'm not going to tolerate it anymore. You're a changed man.
Lori smiled, proudly.
You're damn right I am. Then I'm with you. Lori bent over and kissed him again. How about dinner tomorrow night after work? I owe you a gin and tonic.
Your place?
Perfect. Lori smiled at him again, just as the patterned curtain was moved to the side and they both turned to see Paul sticking his head into the examining room, looking from Lori to Eric with a slowly spreading grin.
When's the wedding, kids?
Paul asked, in delight. Chapter 62. Eric spent the next 2 hours in the conference room on the executive floor meeting with Captain Neumeyer, Detective Rhodes, and the assistant district attorney. He'd changed into another set of generic sweats from Paul and had told him everything that had happened, from when he found the omissions in Virginia's medical file to the horrifying fight on the patio. They asked detailed questions, which he answered as completely as possible, subject to objections from Paul, who never let the authorities get anywhere near the issue of confidentiality. Sitting to his left during the questioning was Mike from Legal, and beside him, Tom and Brad, all of whom listened quietly and took notes, but asked no questions. When that was finally over, Eric still had a question. He turned to Detective Rhodes. Now that you know Max is innocent of Renee's murder, what happens?
It's not quite that easy. We'll follow up on your statement, investigate, and touch base with his lawyer to see if they will cooperate and give us an interview. Obviously, it isn't enough to rely on what you said, though that's no reflection on your credibility, but rather on the credibility of Sam Ward.
Eric winced at the mention of Sam's name. It was still so hard to believe that Sam was gone, having died such an awful death, and Eric was still wrapping his mind around the fact that Sam had tried to murder Christine and sabotaged Perino's health, much less betrayed their friendship. Eric knew it would take some time to sort out his conflicted feelings. But at bottom, he felt raw and aching, the pain of loss and grief. Max still has to deal with criminal charges stemming from the hostage-taking at the mall.
That will be a matter not for us, but for the Upper Marion Police and Captain Neumeier.
Detective Rhodes nodded in Captain Neumeier's direction. Would you like to address that? Captain Neumeier cleared his throat.
Dr. Parrish, I'll have to discuss it with the assistant district attorney, who will discuss it with the district attorney.
Eric thought it sounded like law enforcement buck-passing, but every institution had its own bureaucracy, whether they wore badges or white coats.
Where is Max now?
Max is being moved to one of the local mental health facilities for evaluation and treatment.
Which facility?
Eric felt Paul kick him under the table, but he was beyond worrying about that anymore.
I'm unsure at this juncture.
Detective Rhodes glanced at Captain Neumeier, who was already getting up, getting his notes in order and slipping his ballpoint pen into his pocket.
I think we're finished here, though we'll have to ask you to remain within jurisdiction.
What? Why? Eric asked, surprised. Detective Rhodes frowned.
Just until we've investigated your statement, Dr. Parrish.
Fine. Eric read between the lines. That was just a matter of time. Paul shook his head.
Don't make me sorry we played ball with you, Detective. I'm not out of ammunition yet, and I can still do you damage in the press, especially after today.
Detective Rhodes stood up heavily, picking up his pad and slipping it inside his sport jacket.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. We'll be in touch.
Mike sprang to his wingtips.
Officers, let me show you out.
Thank you.
Detective Rhodes crossed to the door with Captain Neumeier and the assistant district attorney. They said their goodbyes, then left. And Eric could hear Dee Dee outside offering to take them to the elevator. Mike came back into the room and closed the door behind him.
Eric, we need to talk.
I'll say.
Allow me, please.
Mike glanced at Brad and Tom as he returned to the conference table, pulled out his chair and sat back down opposite Eric and Paul.
I know I speak for Brad, Tom, and the entire PhilaHealth partnership and HGH family when I say that we appreciate your efforts.
Enough.
Eric held up a hand. He couldn't hear another word that sounded like an employee manual.
First, I want to be reinstated as chief immediately. It should be obvious by now that Christine's sexual harassment claim was bogus. She did it at Sam's behest, probably for a recommendation. And you can verify that with her when she's well enough. I want you to issue a press release immediately, and I'll start back to work tomorrow to keep some semblance of continuity for the patients and clean up the unit.
Mike blinked, flustered.
Tom nodded.
Done,
he answered simply.
Second, I'm concerned about any drugs Sam may or may not have been giving Donald Perino while he was treating him, and
Mike interjected nervously.
I'm sure Mrs. Perino will file suit.
Eric let it go.
Lawsuit or no, it's important for the integrity of my unit and the hospital that we appoint an independent investigator to look into this matter.
I would do it myself, but I think that will raise the question of a conflict of interest. Paul added,
you want to avoid even the appearance of impropriety.
Right.
Eric nodded at Paul, then turned to Mike, Tom, and Brad.
I don't want to pull any punches on this investigation. We have to have somebody look at it with a hard eye and let the chips fall. If Sam did anything to harm Perino's care, I want to know about it, even if I'm held responsible as his boss, and even if the hospital is held responsible as his employer.
Mike's eyes flared.
As a legal matter, any such acts or wrongdoing by Sam would be criminally negligent acts and outside the scope of employment, and therefore the hospital would not be liable. You have the most to lose, Eric, in the event of a lawsuit by Mrs. Perino. I'm sure her attorneys would argue that you were negligent in your supervision of Sam and—
Stop.
Eric held up a hand again, shifting his attention to Tom.
Do I have your word on that? We start an independent investigation?
Yes, Tom nodded.
We would order such an investigation, given the potential liability of the system as a whole. The last thing the PhilaHealth Partnership desires is to allow any such wrongdoing to taint our reputation for patient care.
As you know, I'm a surgeon. If we need to cut, I'm not afraid to cut.
Good.
Eric read between the lines, hearing that he might have to take the fall for Sam. But be that as it may, he knew now that if he got fired, he would survive. He'd certainly been through worse.
Tom cleared his throat. Then we agree. It's my hope that we will weather the storm, no matter if Mrs. Perino files suit. and that you wouldn't be liable for any negligence, especially given your number two ranking, which we are about to roll out, and—
No rolling, Eric cut him off. Stop the rolling.
Paul chuckled.
You mean slow your roll?
Eric smiled.
I do.
How did you know that?
I might be in love with you.
Eric faced Tom, his smile fading fast. Third, you need to send a letter to the U.S. medical report telling them that we withdraw the HGH psychiatry service from the ranking. Given this debacle, with patient care so grievously compromised, we cannot go forward and accept that ranking. I will not go in front of any camera, smile, or make any speech.
Mike gasped. Eric, really?
Tom frowned.
Eric, think about what you're saying.
Brad looked at Eric like he was crazy.
You can't mean this. You've been through hell today this past week. You're under enormous stress.
We apologize for the role we may have played in that, however inadvertent, because we were completely misled by that young girl.
Stop.
Eric shook his head. Christine was a victim. She was Sam's victim as much as Renee Bevilacqua. I'm not going to play ball with the ranking. I suggest you withdraw us before it becomes public. Then nobody will be the wiser.
Eric paused, thinking clearly.
And I promise you this. Next year, we'll earn that ranking. And it won't be number two. It'll be number one.
Tom and Brad exchanged glances, and Mike clammed up. Paul interjected.
Eric, I do. I love you.
Eric ignored him.
Last point. He turned away from Mike to Tom and Brad. I want an independent investigation by outside counsel of Morris Brexler and any financial misconduct he may have engaged in on the Pharmacy Review Board. We've heard the rumors about him taking kickbacks to promote certain drugs, most recently Restatin. You don't need me to tell you that there's corruption in our profession, from which drugs get approved by the FDA down to what gets carried in the hospitals, and what's given as free samples. I'm not content to turn a blind eye to my suspicions any longer. I want to do something about it. At the same time, nobody knows better than I do that it's unjust to be wrongly accused. If Morris is taking some kind of kickbacks, we need to stop him and punish him. If he's not, we need to clear him.
Brad, Tom, and Mike fell momentarily speechless.
Well, Eric said coolly.
Tom answered,
You're asking a lot, Eric. It's about damn time, isn't it? We'll take it under consideration. You'll see the wisdom of my suggestion, or the press will.
Eric glanced at Paul, slyly, then back to Brad, Tom, and Mike.
Did you know that Harry Truman never said, give him hell? He said, I never said give him hell. I told the truth, and they thought it was hell. Now, boys, take care. I'm going home.
Eric rose, and so did Paul, almost in unison. They walked to the door. And it struck Eric that the last time he was in this room, he'd been asked to pee in a cup. He left without another word.
Chapter 63. It was dark by the time Eric left the hospital parking lot, holding up his hand against the camera flashes and Klieg lights of the media, which were being held back by HGH security guards. The local TV was already running the story of Sam's grisly death on a continuous loop. Eric had shut off the examining room TV when the breaking news banner had come on. Horror at HGH. He accelerated until he left the hospital campus and noticed a few news vans in his rearview mirror, so he turned right, then left, trying to lose them. It didn't work, and he stopped trying. They had his home address already, and he had something more important he wanted to do. He stopped at a traffic light, slid his phone from his pocket, and dialed Caitlin's cell number so he could speak to Hannah. The dashboard clock read 10:23, but he still wanted to give it a shot. The phone rang a few times, then went to voicemail, so he hung up. He tried the house number, and it rang and rang, then went to voicemail too. He hung up, and the traffic light turned green, so he drove forward, vaguely defeated. He wanted to talk to Hannah to let her know that he was okay, but at a deeper level, he knew that he wanted to hear her voice. Eric set his phone aside,
drove home on autopilot, and turned onto his street without even realizing how he'd gotten there. A line of parked cars, news vans, and reporters thronged in front of his house. But he cruised past, turned into the driveway, cut the ignition, and got out of the car, tuning out their shouted questions as he jogged down the driveway to his office entrance. He shut the door, finally exhaling and looking around at the books and papers scattered all over the rug and the empty space on his desk where his computer used to be. He walked through the office, entered the house, and went almost reflexively to the kitchen where he opened the refrigerator door and got out a beer. He reached into the silverware drawer left open by the police, rummaged around for the church key, popped the top off the bottle, and took a cold slug. The beer was chilly and delicious, and his gaze traveled over the open drawers, pots and pans on the butcher block countertops, and the weird black smudges of fingerprint dust. Eric wanted to put it all behind him, and there was no time like the present. He took another tug of beer, set the bottle down, and started putting things away, returning the colander, pots, and frying pans to the base cabinets, closing the silverware and utensils drawers. He shut the freezer door and took another sip of beer, then crossed to the sink, wet a sponge under the faucet, and tried to scrub off the fingerprint dust. He found himself getting a second wind, somehow feeling that if he could clean up his house, he could put the pieces of his life back together. The reporters out front kept up a constant noise level, but he screened them out, fetching the dishwashing liquid and squirting a green squiggle onto the fingerprint dust, then scrubbing and rinsing until he got the first patch of clean. He was about to start on the second when he heard some knocking coming from the door to his home office. He threw down the sponge, cranky that the reporters were getting aggressive, and he stalked back down the hallway and into his home office to confront them. "You guys have a lot of nerve," Eric said, opening the door, and there on the step stood Caitlin with Hannah.
"Daddy!"
Hannah cried, raising her arms.
"Honey!"
Eric shouted with happiness, scooping her up and burying his head in her warm neck. And suddenly, his world felt complete. Chapter 64.
"I'd offer you something to drink, but you see how it is. Want some water?"
Eric gestured self-consciously at the kitchen, unable to hide his surprise at Caitlin's being here with Hannah.
"That's okay, no worries."
Caitlin forced a smile, eyeing the debris.
"Love what you've done with the place."
"How did you know I'd be home?"
"I heard they were finished questioning you."
"Oh, well, good to see you."
Eric felt so awkward, standing near Caitlin in a kitchen that wasn't theirs, turned upside down. It didn't help that she looked great, in a white t-shirt, cutoffs, and pink sneakers, with her hair in a ponytail. She even had her glasses on, a look he particularly liked, an older version of Hannah. They were even dressed the same. Hannah bopped into the living room.
"Daddy, your house is so messy, you need to clean up."
"I know, you're right," Eric said lightly, without elaborating. "That's what I was doing when you guys came here. What a nice surprise, and on a school night."
Caitlin motioned, vaguely, at nothing. "We saw the news, and I thought it would be a good thing for Hannah to see you face to face, not just talk on the phone. She was worried about you."
"Wow, thank you," Eric said, touched.
"Sorry about the reporters."
"Par for the course. So you're okay, that's all that matters. It must be some story, but I'll have to hear it another time."
"Right, yeah.
Weird about Sam. I'm sorry, though, I know you liked him."
"Thanks."
Eric felt at a sudden loss for words, glancing over at Hannah, who was gathering books that had been tossed onto the floor and shelving them.
"Hannah, you're cleaning up for me over there, thank you very much."
"Daddy, it's like you had an earthquake."
"I know,"
Eric called back, managing a smile as he turned to Caitlin.
"It's late, you guys must be tired."
"I figured she could go in late tomorrow if she wants, maybe sleep in."
"Right. Great idea."
Eric hid his surprise, since it was so unlike Caitlin to bend any rules.
"Anyway, I knew that your place might be a mess, so I figured that if you wanted to, you could come stay at the house tonight."
Caitlin shot him a look.
"Don't get the wrong idea. I'm going to stay at Brian's."
The wrong idea. Perish the thought. Eric forced a smile. He had gotten the wrong idea, but a part of him wasn't so sure it was the right idea anymore, and in any event, it wasn't her idea. You and Hannah can have breakfast together, then you can take her to school. Caitlin reached in her back pocket and took out her key ring, a silver disc with the scales of justice, which he'd given her a few years ago. She unclipped the ring, slid out the key, and handed it to him. Here. Thanks. Eric accepted the key. When I'm finished with it, I'll put it under the coffee can in the garage. Keep the key. You don't have to return it. Caitlin glanced in the living room where Hannah was busy shelving books like a future librarian. No, that's okay, Eric said, touched. It's your house. I'm clear on that now. No, not anymore. Caitlin lowered her voice and met his eye directly, if a little sadly. I blew off the deal with the German buyer.
What?
Eric didn't understand. Let's make a new deal. I'll sell you the house for the appraised value if that's what you want. I don't want to live there, but you can. Then maybe going forward we can share Hannah's time 50-50. A week with you, then one with me. The transitions won't be too hard for her if one of the houses is hers. What do you say? Eric's throat caught. His heart felt full at the prospect of living with Hannah again under the same roof, especially in his own home. He could mow his own lawn and weed whack his butt off. It was the perfect solution. He asked, Are you serious? Yes. Caitlin nodded, her eyes filming, but she held off tears. Why are you doing this? Eric couldn't help but ask. You going to make me say nice things about you? Caitlin shrugged, swallowing hard. I thought about what happened at the hospital, after the mall. You're dedicated and committed. You're a good guy. I changed my mind. You changed my mind. Thanks. Eric smiled. He felt a bittersweet knot in his chest that he knew would be there forever. Caitlin smiled back. And you're a great father. Thank you. You're a great mother. Eric saw Caitlin's eyes brimming again because he knew she didn't believe that about herself. You are a great mother. Well, anyway, Caitlin cleared her throat, moving past the emotional moment. As I was saying, I decided that the best thing we can do for Hannah as her mom and dad is to work together. We have to be able to talk to each other, too. We can do better than this. I know we can. I know we can't, too. Eric felt his spirits soar. So, no more lawyers? No more lawyers. Present company excluded. Caitlin smiled crookedly. Do we have a deal? Did you ask her? Eric whispered, nodding toward Hannah, still shelving books. I said yes, Hannah called back. Caitlin laughed, and so did Eric, throwing his head back, happy and finally free. Then we have a deal, Caitlin. Chapter 65. The next morning dawned sunny, and Eric got to work at the regular time since Hannah hadn't wanted to miss any school. He crossed the parking lot with a slew of other employees, aware that heads were turning in his direction. Hospital employees were nodding to him, smiling at him or trying to catch his eye, and Eric smiled back, though he was looking forward to the day when his every fart wasn't cause for celebration. He hit the breezeway at the same time as Sharon McGregor from the Pharmacy Review Board, elegant in some kind of gold tweed suit. She waved him down, fell into step beside him, and patted him on the back. Eric, my goodness, I can't believe what I'm hearing about you. What a nightmare that must have been. Is it finally over?
Hell no, Eric looked over with a smile. It'll continue at the next Pharmacy Review Board meeting.
Ha!
Sharon laughed. And so did Eric, but only he knew he wasn't kidding. They parted ways in the lobby when he went to the elevator bank that led to right and hit the up button in front of an adoring audience. He climbed into the crowded elevator, accepting congratulations, answering questions, and generally feeling the love, though he suddenly realized that he didn't have his red employee lanyard, with the red W for wacko. He made a mental note to get a new ID, though he didn't know how the rest of the hospital would view the psych unit from here on out. The horror of what Sam had done would never be forgotten, and Eric could only hope that his deeds had redeemed the unit.
Either way, he was proud of his team, and he couldn't wait to get upstairs, pick up the pieces, and get back to taking care of his patients. He got off the elevator on his floor and didn't have to look far to see the damage from yesterday's fire. The air still smelled burned, and there was the slightest haze. Water had damaged the floor tiles, causing some buckling at the edges, and rolling water buckets with mops were lined up against the wall, next to two folded yellow signs that read, "Caution, slipping hazard." Eric crossed to the unit, mentally gearing up. He'd gotten emails from three different hospital departments about cleaning up the water and fire damage, which would require a major effort. Fortunately, the HGH sprinkler system was zoned, and the sprinklers on the north side of the unit hadn't been turned on, so most of the patient rooms had gone undamaged. It was the south side, the TV lounge, dining hall, and the nurse's station at the front that were water damaged. He unlocked the first door to the unit, entered the airlock, then unlocked the interior door and entered the unit to find his staff milling around in confusion amid the water puddling on the tile floor, smelly and slightly hazy air, and the waterlogged nurse's station with defunct computers, monitors, and telephones. "Hey, everybody," Eric called to them, and they turned their heads. Amaka, Jack, David, Tina, the other nurses, nurses' aides, psych techs, caseworkers, and a crew of janitors in blue jumpsuits. "Eric, you made it! You're back!" everybody called out at once, surging toward him like a crowd of reporters, but in a good way. "Are you staying? Are you okay?" "Yes, I'm back." Eric threw open his arms, gave Amaka a big hug when she came forward, then waved for order. "Thank you for holding the fort in my absence. You've done an amazing job." "We're number two! We're number two!" Jack called out. But Eric didn't burst his bubble. Just yet. "Okay, everybody, please, settle down. I have something I want to say." Eric centered himself for a moment. "Consider where we find ourselves. We have been through hell this past week. We've seen the suffering of our patients. We've been betrayed by someone we held dear, yet we grieve his loss in many ways. The loss of who we thought he was. The loss of his presence and his contribution to our patient care before he took his terrible turn." Eric could see faces falling around him, his staff struggling with conflicted feelings over Sam, their anger, bewilderment, and grief. "We've seen gruesome violence and death. There has been fire and a deluge. It has simply been an impossibly difficult and traumatic time for all of us." Amaka clucked in agreement. Heads nodded and eyes filmed all around, including Eric's. "Normally we focus on the care of our patients, but we can't overlook or neglect our own care, not after what we've been through. It will take us a while to process the events of this week, and we will discuss it and overthink it and analyze it every which way from Sunday. Our specialty is talk therapy, and we will talk until we're blue in the face." Amaka broke into a smile and the nurses laughed. "Going forward, we will heal this unit. We're trained to deal with trauma. In fact, we're the only service in this entire hospital trained to heal emotional trauma. So, as a matter of fact, it couldn't have happened to a better group of people. We didn't choose this test, it chose us. And we will get through it, together, with flying colors. Are you with me?" "Yes," everybody cried. "Thank you," Eric said, feeling himself smile from the very depth of his soul. "Okay. The first thing we're going to do is have a quick morning meeting in the conference room as usual. I want the same bad coffee and the even worse decor. I want Amaka to tell us how every patient spent last night, because they are our first priority. And then we're going to roll up our sleeves, clean up this unit, and get it back in business. Ready, set, go!" Chapter 66. After a long day of putting the unit back together, Eric parked in the visitor space in front of Lori's garden apartment, walked up the front walk, and knocked on her door. He'd bought a bouquet of daisies from the grocery store. He'd showered and changed. He'd put on aftershave he'd found in the bottom of his DOP kit. He was about to have his first real date in over a decade, which was harder than breaching an armed police barricade at the King of Prussia Mall.
Hey, hi.
Laurie opened the door and smiled.
Flowers, how nice.
I'm here. Eric realized it sounded idiotic the moment he said it, though he saw that she had showered and changed, too, into a soft blue work shirt and denim shorts, with her dark hair finally worn down, making thick, rich curls around her chin. She was barefoot, which he thought was cute.
Come in, thanks.
Laurie accepted the flowers, then kissed him on the cheek lightly, and Eric tried to relax as he stepped into the apartment, which smelled like something delicious was cooking with cheese and tomatoes. The table was already set with another loaf of artisanal bread, a block of butter, and a wooden bowl full of arugula, avocados, cherry tomatoes, and onions. He remembered that Caitlin would never even kiss him if he had had onions. At the end of their marriage, he found himself choosing the onions.
What's for dinner? It smells great.
My specialty, eggplant parm.
It's hearty and comforting, which is just what the doctor ordered. Laurie went into the kitchen with the bouquet, opened the cabinet, and retrieved a glass vase.
Can I help?
Eric followed her into the kitchen and leaned against the counter. He stopped short of kissing her on the cheek. He was trying to slow his roll, now that he'd learned the expression. He watched Laurie put the bouquet in the sink, get a scissors from the drawer, and cut the twine around the wrapping.
The eggplant's already in the oven, but you can make us both a drink.
Laurie nodded toward a bottle of Tanqueray, one of tonic and two tumblers, next to a juicy lime on a small plate which had been cut into perfect eighths. On the chopping board was a sliced mound of parsley and fresh green basil.
Will do. How do you like your drink, light or heavy?
Light. So how was work?
Tough, you can imagine.
Eric crossed to the refrigerator with the tumblers, used them to scoop some ice out of the bin, and returned to the counter. Lots of hugs and tears from the staff. Lots of nerves and worry from the patients. The logistics were a mess, trying to use humidifiers to get rid of the water. Then we had to go begging for computers, phones, and new chairs. We tried to salvage what we could. My phone rang constantly. Everybody had a million questions.
I bet. How was Perino?
I spent some time with him, talking to him and his wife. It will take him some time to come to terms with this. Eric untwisted the cap off the gin and poured them both a light drink.
The poor guy. It's traumatic.
I also looked through his file. Perino was on risperidone and fluoxetine, and I suspect Sam was dosing him with Ritalin, too. Sam had an expertise in ADHD and Ritalin, Vyvanse, and that family of drugs. They would have wound Perino up and made him aggressive, and it would explain why he wasn't responding to treatment. Laurie groaned.
Why would he do that?
I think he used people as pawns. My sense is that he would use Perino as another kind of weapon against me, and maybe even to set Perino up to attack me. I learned today that Perino has a lot of delusional beliefs about me, and I'm betting that Sam filled his head with them. Eric cracked the cap off the tonic bottle with a satisfying hiss and filled the glasses.
That's horrible.
I know.
Eric squeezed in some lime juice, relaxing as he realized that it was completely possible to go from being friends to maybe being lovers. The two of them always talked shop when they ran, and this was like that, only stationary. He felt natural around Laurie, and he liked the whole scene, the aromas of the food, her easy way with him, how nurturing she was. Eric had always heard the expression that you didn't know what you had until it was gone, but he suddenly had a different insight, that you didn't know what you were missing until you had it. It looked like he was going to have it, and he felt good inside.
Everybody's saying the wife is going to sue. That's all anybody ever worries about in administration.
I know, right?
Eric handed Laurie her drink.
Here we go. Cheers.
Cheers.
Laurie raised her glass, then took a sip.
Perfect.
Really?
Eric sipped his drink, which tasted tart and great.
Not bad.
No, it's perfect.
Laurie smiled more warmly.
Everything's perfect, really.
That's just what I think, Eric said, touched and happy.
He leaned over and was about to kiss her when his phone started ringing.
Damn it,
Saved by the bell.
Very funny. Eric slid the phone from his pocket and the screen showed the hospital's number.
I should take this.
Go ahead, dinner's in 10 minutes, but I can lower the heat if I have to.
Thanks.
Eric touched the screen to answer the call. This is Eric Parrish, he said, but all he could hear was static, and the voice on the other end was breaking up.
Hello? Hello?
Eric, go to the hallway, Lori called to him. Remember, the reception's bad lately. Eric hustled from the room and into the hallway. The phone call was still breaking up. Hello, can you hear me?
Dr. Parrish?
A woman started to say, but static swallowed her sentence. Hello, hello? Eric kept moving to get a signal, passing the bathroom and walking toward the two rooms off the hallway. Lori's home office and her bedroom.
This is Eric Parrish. Hello, hello? Dr. Parrish, are you there?
Hold on, can you hear me now?
Eric ducked through the open door to Lori's office, which he'd never seen. It was small, cozy, and characteristically cheery. White shelves full of books ringed the room, ending in a white metal file cabinet. A white desk and an ergonomic chair sat next to the door, against a wall covered with colorful art posters by Chagall, Miró, and Rothko.
Yes. Hi, this is Julia Meehan. I got your number from the directory.
Julia who?
Eric heard her clearly, but didn't recognize her name. He sat down at Lori's desk.
From IT, at the hospital. Anyway, remember you asked me to look up who accessed Ms. Teichner's file after her discharge?
Oh, yes.
Hi,
Eric remembered.
Sorry I freaked out when you came in yesterday. It's so spooky working near the morgue. I hate when I'm the last one to leave work, that's why I lock the door.
That's okay. Sorry I didn't give you my real name.
Eric eyed the things on Lori's desk, a silver laptop and a row of wind-up toys, a bright yellow chick, a blue robot, and a tiger that did backflips.
No worries. My boss told me it's okay to give you the info.
Go ahead.
Eric knew the name would be Sam's, but it would be good to have it verified.
That file was accessed by Dr. Sam Ward and Dr. Lori Fortunato.
Eric didn't think he'd heard her right. Who did you say? The last one?
Dr. Lori Fortunato.
Eric realized the explanation.
Oh, of course, she accessed it yesterday for me. She showed me the file. Yes, Dr. Fortunato accessed it yesterday.
Okay, thanks.
Wait, hold on. She also accessed it 2 months ago, post-discharge.
Eric didn't understand.
That can't be.
It is. She logged in twice, once yesterday and once 2 months ago.
Are you sure about that?
Positive. If you want the exact dates and times, I can give them to you. I can even tell you how long the file was kept open each time. Do you have a pen and paper?
Hold on.
Eric looked around for a piece of paper, but there wasn't any on the clean desk. He glanced at the black mesh wastebasket next to the desk, which was almost empty except for a few crumpled bills and envelopes. He grabbed an envelope and slid a pen from his shirt pocket.
Go ahead.
Dr. Fortunato accessed it yesterday, and on April 18th. The patient was discharged April 15th.
Eric felt too numb to even make a note.
When did Dr. Ward access it?
The same day as Dr. Fortunato, April 18th.
Dr. Fortunato accessed it at 9:05 a.m., and Dr. Ward accessed it at 9:30 a.m. She had the file open for 5 minutes, and he had it open for 10 minutes.
Eric felt stunned. He couldn't speak. He didn't understand.
Lori had told him she'd never accessed a patient's file after discharge, but she'd accessed Virginia's right before Sam.
His gaze fell on the wind-up toys without really seeing them. Then something shiny caught his eye, glinting at him from the bottom of the wastebasket.
Dr. Parrish, are you there?
Yes. Fine, thanks. Goodbye.
Eric hung up, shaken. He didn't know why Lori had lied to him or why she had accessed Virginia's file, especially the same day as Sam. He didn't think Lori had even heard of Virginia until last Friday night, when Max had brought her into the ED. Eric found himself staring at the shiny spot in the wastebasket. He set his phone and pen down, reached inside the wastebasket, moved aside a tissue, then did a double take. Blood rushed to his head, striking him dumb. It was almost beyond belief.
but at the same time, it was absolute confirmation. Eric felt his heart break, but he knew what he had to do.
Chapter 67. Eric came back into the kitchen trying to compose himself. The room still smelled delicious, but now it turned his stomach. The phone's been crazy like that all day. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Have a drink. Lori turned, draining the last of her drink.
I might be getting tipsy. Don't try to take advantage of me until after dinner. I have everything planned. You'll see.
Eric faked a smile, but his blood ran cold. It terrified him to think what she had planned. Unless he missed his guess, he'd walked into the lion's den. But he had a plan of his own.
What's the matter? You don't look so good.
Eric thought fast. Oh, it was just the phone call.
Who was it?
Laurie uncapped the Tanqueray and poured herself another splash.
Amaka, checking on some things for tomorrow, but she's so sad. It's been tough on them about Sam. They're taking it hard.
I'm sure. Laurie emptied the leftover tonic into the glass. She didn't bother to get new ice, and Eric wondered if her drinking was part of her plan.
They need time to process it. We all do. We all loved him, so it's hard to believe what he did and what he was. It doesn't jive with the person we knew.
Of course not. It's such a betrayal.
That's part of it, but not all.
Eric started speaking from the heart in a way he couldn't not.
I wish I'd seen it coming. I wish I'd known. I liked him. I trusted him. I can't believe it.
I know. It's tough.
Lori puckered her lip in sympathy.
He was a friend.
Eric paused, taking a chance.
I wish you had known him better.
Yeah, me too. He seemed like a nice guy.
Lori nodded, her expression sympathetic.
He was. We all felt that way.
I wonder if his wife knew.
She probably didn't.
I wish I'd known. I could have helped him.
Helped him do what?
Lori cocked her head, pausing in mid-drink.
Helped him get better. Alleviated his suffering. I could have treated him. He didn't want to be the way he was or do the harm he did. He was sick.
You're wrong.
He wasn't sick. He was evil. He chose to be the way he was.
He must have liked the choices he made.
Lori frowned as she set down her glass, her mood darkening, and Eric wasn't sure where it was going, but he was going along.
I disagree. Evil isn't a choice, it's a label. A short answer. Evil doesn't go far enough. Evil doesn't stand up to analysis from a psychiatric point of view. Sam had an illness.
What was his illness, then, from a psychiatric point of view?
Lori folded her arms, and Eric met her eye. He manipulated others for his own gain. He used people as puppets so he could ruin me and become chief. He felt nothing for others. All of his emotions were for show. His act fooled everyone on the unit for years. He even fooled me. But none of that was a talent, a skill, or a choice on his part. It was a symptom.
Of what?
He was a sociopath. Whatever his motivation, it wasn't the root cause of what he did. His illness is the root cause. His planning only proves how very, very sick he was. Eric watched her face darken, eyes harden and smile flatten, and Lori began to change before his eyes, becoming who she really was, about to shed the mask completely. He kept talking, provoking her.
We're unsure whether sociopaths are born or bred, but I think it's a bit of both, and the weight of the literature agrees.
Sociopaths are sick people, and they lead horrible lives.
How do you know that?
Lori lifted an eyebrow, betraying her contempt.
Have you ever treated a sociopath?
Yes, too. I did med checks in the clinic at Albion Penitentiary in Western Pennsylvania during my training. Both of the sociopaths I treated were in prison for life, for murder. I remember when I was with one patient, his eyes were stone cold. He had the shark stare, all of the stereotypical symptoms.
Like on TV, Lori snorted.
Yes, the prisons are full of sociopaths, where you would expect to find them. In point of fact,
There are more of them in everyday life than on death row. Most of them look normal, whatever that is. Eric paused, thinking of Hannah. But normalcy is a fallacy. Normalcy is an appearance. Normalcy is just for show. I never heard you talk like this. Lori frowned again, standing by the sink. I'm a changed man, like you said, and frankly, I never got it before. I said it, but I never really got it. Eric was telling the truth. He'd just had an insight, but he just wished it didn't take a life-threatening situation to bring him there. A sociopath has a very well-defined theory of mind. He thinks he's superior, but it's a false belief. He's arrogant, but like any arrogance, it's only a facade. A sociopath thinks he has a strong ego, but he has a very weak ego. Basically, a sociopath is delusional. I don't agree with any of this, Lori recoiled, her lip curling in distaste. I don't know why we're even talking about it. Because I was thinking about Sam. I feel sympathy for him. I pity him. Lori's eyes hardened, but Eric couldn't stop talking now. He knew he was poking a tiger in a cage, but he wanted to know if it was really true. She would never confess. But he wanted her to show herself, even to attack. Lori, think about it this way. A sociopath is hollow inside, empty of feeling. They're sick, but they can't face that fact. Because they can't face that fact, they never get the help they need. What if they know what they are, but they don't want help? That's exactly how a sociopath feels. But it's merely a symptom of the illness. That's what the illness does. What if they like being the way they are? Lori's eyes narrowed. Also a symptom of the illness. But in reality, they're missing out on the feelings that everyone else has. Love, joy, sorrow, grief, true happiness. The full array, the stuff of a real life. You call me Captain Emotion, but what else is there to life? What are the things we remember but the feelings we have? Any family photograph we own, it's not about the picture. It's about the emotion the picture provokes. Eric felt his throat catch, but stayed the course. Sociopaths never know that joy. They hide behind their mask. They keep life at arm's length. I pity them. They're not living, and if they didn't hide their mental illness so well, they could get the treatment they need. If we couldn't cure them, then at least we could alleviate their suffering. You don't know what you're talking about, Eric. Lori raised her voice, and her dark eyes flashed with new anger. You don't know anything. All this mumbo-jumbo, there's no science in it. You talk about a theory of the mind, but it's only theory. All of it. You're the one who acts superior, but isn't. You don't know anything. Look at the choices you've made in your life. What do you mean? Eric asked, modulating his tone. Look how long you stayed with Caitlin. You made a fool of yourself over that woman. Lori scowled. You couldn't see that she wasn't worth the trouble all this time. I've known you since medical school. Years and years I've been your friend. You had to know I wanted you. You had to know I was waiting for you, but you didn't choose me over her. Lori waved her hand angrily at the flowers. You choose me now, after she dumps you. But that's too little, too late. You never dumped her for me. You never saw that I was better, prettier, smarter, more successful. I'm sure I'm better in bed, but you were too stupid to see it. And you're too stupid to see anything with Sam. You're too stupid to see anything right in front of your face.
Am I?
Eric went into his pocket, pulled out the tissue, and watched Lori's eyes follow his motion. What's that?
Never mind.
Eric swung the tissue low and away from her like a tease. Why did you access Virginia's file after her discharge? Why did you lie to me about it?
What are you talking about? Lori shot back. I didn't do that. I didn't lie.
Yes, you did. You accessed the file right before Sam did. You went into the file, saw his notations about the consult, and told him to delete them. You knew Sam better than I did. You used him like a puppet. He wasn't the planner. You were. He wasn't the mastermind. You are.
What's in that Kleenex?
Lori glowered. And Eric took a step backwards, still holding the tissue away from her, taunting her. You set me up from the beginning. It wasn't happenstance that you called me to the ED for that consult Friday night. You had a plan.
You wanted to ruin me because I didn't choose you over Caitlin. What's in that Kleenex?
Lori grimaced, as fixated on the tissue as a wolf on fresh meat. Were you sleeping with him? Was he in love with you? Is that how you got him to kill Renee?
That's my bet. And here's the trophy that he brought you, proof that he did what you told him, proof of his love.
Lori looked down at the tissue as Eric opened it without touching its contents, a delicate gold necklace with a little plate on it that read Fearless. Eric remembered seeing it at the frozen yogurt shop. He remembered Max's talking about it in session. It was Renee Bavalacqua's necklace, and it would have Sam's and Lori's fingerprints.
No! Lori shouted.
Suddenly, in one horrific motion, Lori grabbed the scissors from the sink and slashed her lower arm, sending blood spraying in the air like a gruesome red fan.
No, don't! Stop!
Eric edged backwards, passing the entertainment center. He spotted a video game player from the shelf, yanked it free, and threw it at her, but she ducked and it landed on the hardwood floor.
We were on a date. I drank too much.
Lori started talking as if to herself.
You tried to date rape me. You grabbed a scissors. You held it to my throat. We struggled for it.
No, Lori, don't. Eric kept moving backwards toward the door. He heard noise out front. He had to stall for only a few moments longer. He'd called Detective Rhodes from Lori's home office after he'd found the necklace.
I got the scissors away from you. I tried to run out the front door.
Lori advanced on him, the scissors poised.
I was almost outside, but you tackled me. You ripped my shirt open. I had to kill you. It was self-defense.
Lori, stop. Eric flung open the front door, just as Lori tore her own shirt open, clawing at the buttons and trying to rip them off, only to see Detective Rhodes running up the front walk with uniformed police drawing their weapons and aiming them at her.
Dr. Fortunato, freeze! Detective Rhodes shouted. Freeze, right there!
No!
Lori screamed, in a rage that came from her tortured psyche. She raised the scissors high, but Eric lunged for them on the downward stroke and wrested them from her hand, just before they reached his chest. Chapter 68. It was December, and Eric was pleased to see that the visiting room had been decorated for the holidays, though it wasn't easy to make a juvenile detention center look cheery. Artwork by the residents lined the walls, painted Christmas trees, crayoned Santa Clauses, plus Hanukkah dreidels and Kwanzaa Unity cups drawn with varying degrees of skill. Juveniles from ages 10 to 18 lived in the center's secure detention wing, which contained 36 rooms, one of which was Max's. The visiting room was modern, clean, and medium-sized, with thin blue carpeting and large glass windows that let in indirect light, even on an overcast morning, with snow in the forecast. 10 small tables with heavy-duty plastic chairs filled the room, and Eric took his customary table and waited for Max. He kept his coat on because there was nowhere to hang it. In the corner of the visiting room stood a decorated Christmas tree, festooned with colored lights and inexpensive ornaments, and beneath it sat wrapped presents on a cottony carpet of pretend snow. This wouldn't be the happiest Christmas for Max, but the boy was lucky to be here, not in a state prison for adults. Max had been sentenced as a juvenile as a result of a plea agreement orchestrated by his lawyer, his motion supported by 3 psychological assessments, the pretrial evaluation from the psychiatric staff at the detention center, a risk assessment and evaluation by a psychiatrist hired by Marie, and a substantial report by Eric himself. All 3 mental health professionals had agreed that Max suffered from OCD and depression with suicidal ideation, which had impaired his decision-making at the time of the offenses. The federal government had dropped its charges under the terrorism statutes, and the district attorney of Montgomery County had dropped the kidnapping charge in view of the fact that Max had no intent to inflict bodily injury on the hostages, as he'd been unarmed. In return for being sentenced as a juvenile, Max had pleaded guilty to counts of unlawful restraint, reckless endangerment, and terroristic threats, and received a sentence of 1 year in the detention center and 3 years probation thereafter, the maximum possible so-called long-tail sentence. The judge had accepted the deal,
and order the sentence despite opposition from King of Prussia business groups, who wanted Max tried as an adult, if not burned at the stake. Eric looked over to see the door to the visiting room opening, and Max was brought in by a uniformed detention officer. The boy had no handcuffs on or anything of that sort, and the detention officer remained by the door as Max crossed the room toward him with a smile. Eric rose, thinking the boy looked better than he had last visit 2 weeks ago. His aspect seemed brighter. His brown hair cut away from his eyes, and he'd put on some weight, which made him look stronger in his gray sweatsuit, the winter uniform here. He seemed taller, too, but that could have been Eric's imagination. Eric extended his hand. Max, are you growing?
A little bit.
Max grinned, shaking his hand firmly.
The doc said I'm in a growth spurt. Can you believe that?
Ha! Eric sat down. Good to see you. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Max sat opposite him, meeting his eye with a new animation.
Guess what? My mother's getting married.
That's great, Eric said, meaning it. He had visited Marie and Zach recently at their invitation. Marie had gotten out of rehab 2 months ago, landed a job, and Zach had moved in with her.
I'm getting a dad for Christmas, Max rolled his eyes.
Eric chuckled. When's the date?
December next year. They're waiting till I'm out.
Great. So, how do you feel about it?
I'm happy about it, Max nodded. It's a good thing. I like him. He's a nice guy, and he's a good influence on my mom. I don't think she would have gone to rehab without him pushing her.
You're probably right. Eric remembered Lori's saying that she thought Zach was too good for Marie, but he pushed that from his mind. How's school?
Boring and easy, but that's okay.
Max shrugged.
I'm tutoring fifth graders in math. They need the help.
That's nice of you.
You know what I like? The language arts class. I never liked it at Pioneer, but I like it here.
How weird is that?
Not weird. Good. Good for you. They make you do what they call reflective writing, which is like writing in a journal, but you can write whatever you want, like free form. It sounds stupid, but I like it. I'm trying poetry.
Max shrugged sheepishly.
Only because there's nothing else to do, since they don't allow video games.
Poetry is better than video games.
I knew you would say that. It's such a dad thing to say.
There's a reason I say dad things. Eric smiled, though since the summer he'd clarified his relationship to Max in his own mind. Eric no longer felt so paternal toward Max and was clear now that the only person he parented was Hannah. He had his hands full with her, since she was currently lobbying to repaint the entire house pink, outside.
Therapy's going good, too, Max smiled happily. I really like Dr. Gold.
She's terrific. Eric had been happy to refer Max to one of his old friends, Jill Gold, an OCD expert affiliated with the Beck Institute in Philly, which was on the cutting edge of cognitive behavior therapies. The Juvenile Detention Center had cooperated in coordinating its treatment of Max with Dr. Gold's private treatment, which would aid in Max's progress, not only now, but after he left their care.
She's been talking to me a lot about Gummy, and that's sad.
I'm sure. Eric could see Max's face darken when he thought about his grandmother, his grief evident.
It's like I see these good things happening now, like my mom quitting drinking, and I think, why didn't she do that before, like when my grandmother was alive? It would have made her really happy.
Right, of course. But you know, sometimes people grow up only after their parent passes. I'm not saying that's the case with your mother, but it might be. Max pursed his lips, sighing.
Anyway, I'm doing better with my OCD. Dr. Gold's been working with me, doing the flooding techniques. I'm down to tapping once an hour on the hour.
Good for you.
It takes forever, though. It took all this time to get it down just that much.
I know, but it works if you stay with it.
I'm good till 10 o'clock.
Max's gaze shifted to the wall clock, which read 9:10. It will get easier, you'll see.
That's what she says.
Max met Eric's eye with new animation.
You know, she's single.
Dr. Gold? No, she's not. She's married.
No, she got divorced. It was final last month. I heard her talking to one of her friends on the phone.
Max cocked his head.
Are you ready to, like, date?
No, I'm not, Max. Eric was still processing the fact that Lori had turned out to be a sociopath and she was currently in prison awaiting trial. He prayed that she was getting the help she needed, but he was in no position to help her. Paul had never spoken to him again, which he understood.
Dr. Gold reminds me of you, and you guys have a lot in common. She has a daughter, too, about Hannah's age.
Maybe you should give her a call, like, for a date.
I'll think about it.
Eric still felt so sorry that all of this had happened because someone was trying to ruin him, leaving so many lives in pieces and so many people in grief, including Max. He had said as much to Max, Marie, and Zach, as well as to Anthony and Peg Bevilacqua, who had accepted his apology with grace and courage. Linda Perino had filed suit against the hospital, but she had pointedly not named Eric as an individual defendant, and HGH had already offered her a substantial settlement.
Dr. Parrish, you should do more than think about it. I think Dr. Gold's hot for someone like her age.
Eric smiled. Her age is my age.
I know. See, that's another thing you have in common. You could be olds together.
Max laughed.
Enough. I have a surprise for you.
What?
Merry Christmas.
Eric reached in his coat pocket, pulled out a present and placed it on the table in front of Max. It had been wrapped by Hannah in gift wrap from Frozen. He didn't have time to get any proper holiday paper between his job as chief, his private practice at home, and being a hands-on dad, which he loved. He was even getting along better with Caitlin. His life felt as if it were finally falling into place, even though he was, well, crazy busy.
What's this? Max smiled, picking up the gift. You didn't have to do anything.
It's something little. Open it.
Ah!
Max tore the wrapping paper off to reveal a black Ever-Ready flashlight.
Ha!
Remember what I said about the flashlight?
That it's a phallic symbol?
No, Eric laughed. Max laughed too. Then it subsided.
I'm joking, I remember.
So, this is your flashlight. You're just at the beginning of exploring the cave. Keep it with you at all times.
But you're supposed to be with me.
Max grew serious, his face falling. You don't need me. Not anymore. You can do it yourself, and you're doing a wonderful job. If you need a hand to hold on to, you have Dr. Gold's. She's right there with you. Max swallowed hard.
So, what are you saying?
I've been visiting you every week, but I'm thinking that from now on you should call me when you want me to visit. Whenever you want me to come, just call. I'll be in your life as long as you want. How's that?
Okay,
Max blinked, nodding.
Just so you're not ditching me.
Eric's throat caught.
No, I'm not ditching you.
Good, because Dr. Gold will be here any second.
Here? Why?
I told her you wanted to take her to brunch.
You did what?
Eric looked over to the door of the visiting room, and it was swinging wide open.
This is George Newbern. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Every 15 Minutes by Lisa Scottolini. This program was produced by Laura Wilson, recorded by Wes Dewberry at Invisible Studios. Text copyright 2015 by Smart Blonde LLC. Production copyright 2015 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.